It is Wednesday, April 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump warns missiles will be coming to Syria. Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives Paul Ryan will not run for re-election. We get reaction. And rapper Post Malone joins another rapper for a new single. It's all ahead. After Russia's ambassador to Lebanon said Russian forces would shoot down any missiles fired at Syria, President Donald Trump said Wednesday Russia should be ready because they will be coming. Trump said on Twitter, "You shouldn't be partners with a gas-killing animal who kills his people and enjoys it." Russia responded by saying U.S. missiles should target terrorists, not the legitimate government in Syria. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov also said Wednesday all parties involved in Syria should refrain from actions that could destabilize the region. Hours later, the Russian military said it will deploy troops to Douma, the site of a suspected chemical attack Saturday that killed at least 40 people. Russia says its forces will ensure the security of the town. At the UN Security Council Tuesday, both the U.S. and Russia blocked each other's efforts to launch an investigation into the attack on Douma. Political science professor Stephen Zunas, chair of the Middle East Department at the University of San Francisco, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, in some ways, Syria is a throwback to the Cold War days when the two superpowers competed for influence in places like Angola, Vietnam, and Central America.
And even though communism does not, and anti-communism does not seem to be the driving force here, the geostrategic interest of the two powers seem to once again be at conflict.
Stephen, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons is to send an investigation team to Syria. If Syria is implicated in these chemical attacks, why would they want an international probe of this?
It is a good question, particularly since the OPCW report on the attack last year in Khan Sheikhoun did reveal quite a bit of evidence to implicate the Syrian government. This latest attack is somewhat more ambiguous in terms of the initial reports, unlike last year's attack in the north of Syria and the attack in Al Ghouta in 2013, where it was pretty clear from the outset that sarin gas was involved. This latest incident is less clear. It could have been a particularly concentrated form of chlorine gas that was in an enclosed space and therefore had the unusually severe reaction and numbers of deaths. Obviously, the use of any kind of weapon like that in a civilian area would be, constitute a war crime, though it's not generally in the same class of prohibited weapons as is sarin gas.
Would it possibly be that Russia and Syria want this investigation to go on to forestall any Western military action?
It's quite possible that this indeed could be the tactic, but at the same time, if the investigation did prove that Syria was involved, the international support for such an attack would be a lot stronger. The problem is right now for the United States is that ever since the claims about Iraqi chemical and biological weapons and nuclear program proved false, there's widespread skepticism in the world when the United States takes the lead on these questions of unconventional weapons, even in cases such as Syria, where the U.S. is correct.
Lost in all of this controversy about the use of chemical weapons, the evacuation of Douma has completed the Syrian government's victory in eastern Ghouta. What does this do to this conflict?
Well, this is strategically a very important area. Not only does it eliminate rebel control over the last area within artillery range of Damascus, it opens up the Syrian forces to move more freely to areas of the east and northeast. So this has definitely been a strategic setback for opposition forces and yet another of an increasing number of victories for the Syrian regime.
Meanwhile, Syria has reportedly placed its forces on alert for the next 72 hours, while the air traffic control agency Eurocontrol issued an alert from the European Aviation Safety Agency about travel over the eastern Mediterranean and the possible intermittent disruption of radio navigation equipment in the event of military action. Well, joining me by phone is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Well, Sarah, what's not trending?
What's not trending? That's right.
What a news day. This was the day that I fully expected and had been at least initially compiling, looking at what people were saying about Mark Zuckerberg's first day of testimony yesterday on Capitol Hill. By all accounts, it didn't necessarily go so well for him, and also may have exhibited some lack of understanding, perhaps, among some senators about how Facebook and the internet at large works. But then, of course, we've got President Trump's basically telegraphing on Twitter, you know, they will be coming, you know, talking about missiles that are shiny and, quote, smart. I mean, boy, oh, boy, if that's not a signal about what might be coming in Syria. But then also, and then, of course, Michael Cohen. But then also, of course, today, Speaker Paul Ryan, a shock announcement. Maybe not so much a shock, but he announced he's not running for office. He will serve out his term as Speaker and then just simply leave the Congress. Lots of people really genuinely surprised in talking about that. Here's Mitt Romney. Love of country compelled Paul Ryan to accept the speakership, a role he alone could fill at a critical time. He unified the House, passed scores of bills, and led with integrity, honor, and dignity the country will miss. Speaker Ryan, of course, remember that Paul Ryan was Mitt Romney's running mate in 2012 in the presidential election. Larry Sabato, a noted political observer, Speaker Ryan's retirement will be interpreted as practically conceding that the GOP will lose the House and probably will stimulate more Republican retirements. He's somebody who's watched Congress for a long time, so his thoughts have at least some thought or some credibility. Here's Claudia Inez. Speaker Ryan announces he won't seek re-election. In other news, Mike Flynn won't seek another national security position. Manafort won't seek to chair another campaign. Duped students won't seek higher education at Trump University. There are some people, but few, who are, you know, tweeting congratulations, Paul Ryan. But remember, Paul Ryan, you know, held this sort of narrow position very quickly between sort of the old establishment GOP and the more, you might say, rambunctious Trump GOP. It was never an easy fit. And so a lot of the Republicans, a lot of sort of, you know, real sort of fired up Republicans and conservatives are not weeping about this, but they're, you know, basically saying, hey, don't let the door hit you on the, you know, on the rear end on the way out.
All right. Thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. The CEO of Facebook says regulation of the internet sector is inevitable. Two Reuters journalists will face trial in Myanmar. The State Department says there will be no restrictions on travel of Pakistani diplomats in the United States. And President Trump decries never-ending and corrupt Russia probe. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA. This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at the plane crash in Algeria. House of Representatives Speaker Paul Ryan says he will not seek re-election this November. Ryan made the announcement at a Washington news conference Wednesday.
I have given this job everything that I have. and I have no regrets whatsoever for having accepted this responsibility. This has been one of the two greatest honors of my life. The job provides incredible opportunities. But the truth is, it's easy for it to take over everything in your life. And you can't just let that happen. Because there are other things in life that can be fleeting as well. Namely, your time as a husband and a dad, which is the other great honor of my life.
Jeffrey Skelly is an analyst at the University of Virginia's Center for Politics in Charlottesville, Virginia. He tells me his reaction to Ryan's announcement.
Obviously, if the Speaker of the House is not running for re-election, that is a tea leaf that GOP leaders may not think that the November election is going to go all that well for them. So I would take it as a sign that Republicans are probably in trouble in terms of holding on to the House majority.
Now, Mr. Ryan said that he's making this decision, however, for personal reasons, because he wants to spend more time with his family. And he also talked about the fact that he accepted this position, I guess you could say, with some reluctance initially.
Well, look, politicians like to give all sorts of reasons for why they do things, and you often see people who announce retirements claim that family or want to try something new. A lot of things can go into that. So, I don't think it's necessarily wrong to think that played a part in Ryan's retirement, but at the same time, I think the atmosphere in Washington, the political environment, certainly played some role in his decision. Whether or not, that part of that is electoral politics, but also working with President Trump and the struggle that the GOP has had, despite the fact that it controls all levers of government in Washington. It's very possible that part of this is the fact that Ryan never really wanted to be Speaker, or at least it wasn't necessarily an obvious ambition of his. He wasn't working hard to be in the main GOP leadership. He was very focused on fiscal reform as a chairman of a committee. He was looking at that sort of thing. And then with John Boehner exiting, Republicans needed somebody that the House Republican Conference could rally around. And Ryan ended up being sort of the only person who could bring all sides together. And so he was always in a bit of a difficult position on that front. And I would say probably the most interesting part about this retirement announcement is that if Ryan remains the only person who can sort of keep all wings of the GOP together in the House, replacing him is going to be a really big chore. It sounds like Kevin McCarthy, the House Majority Leader, might want to, but, he ran into trouble when Boehner resigned and he was in the same position. And he couldn't end up becoming Speaker, so I'm not sure what that says about efforts for him to be the Speaker this time, if Republicans hold on to the majority, I should say. But he may just be looking at becoming Minority Leader, should Democrats win back the House.
Yeah, I think also Steve Scalise.
Steve Scalise has also been discussed as a possibility. In fact, I think someone pointed out that he'd set up some sort of joint fundraising committee that was a pretty obvious signal of his intention of shooting for the speakership.
Jeffrey Skelly, an analyst at the University of Virginia's Center for Politics. Algerian media is reporting that more than 250 passengers were killed when an Aleutian 78 transport plane crashed in fields near a military base outside the Algerian capital, Algiers. Eyewitnesses say they heard an explosion before seeing the plane crash and burn in nearby fields. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Algerian TV showed video of the Aleutian 78 military transport plane burning on the ground as plumes of white and black smoke billowed into the air and flames licked the side of the plane's fuselage. Dozens of ambulances could be seen in the field where the plane crashed. A nearby resident said he rushed outdoors to see what was happening after hearing an explosion around breakfast time.
He says that he was indoors when he heard the explosion, including a big bang, and then he saw thick plumes of smoke when he went to see what was happening. He said it was a real catastrophe, and everyone was afraid there would be more explosions. Young men, he says, were coming to take pictures of the crash, and he says he called the police and civil defense forces. Another man explained that he and others were not able to get close to the crash after the police arrived. He says that the plane was taking off from the Boufarik military base when it crashed and that firefighters came quickly to try to put out the fire. He says that bodies were scattered all around the wrecked plane, but that he wasn't actually able to get near the wreckage. Other eyewitnesses who saw the crash from a nearby highway told Algerian TV that the pilot appeared to have had technical problems before veering off to the right and crashing in a field. The pilot had the presence of mind to veer off to the side so as not to hit the highway during morning rush hour, the witness said. A young man by the name of Sadik, who lost his brother in the crash, cried as he spoke with journalists. He said that his brother called him before he left on the plane that crashed and told him that he missed him and wished him well. Air safety analyst Mohammed Ben Zarouk told Algeria's Annahar TV that the plane was heading to the far-off region of Tindouf and then to Bouchar and had no doubt filled up his fuel tanks to maximum capacity. Other analysts indicated that the Russian-built Ilyushin 78 transport plane was originally designed to fuel fighter jets in the air. Algerian air defense head Bakush Alash told journalists that there would be an investigation into the crash, as well as an investigation of the type of plane which went down. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. Two rappers are teaming up for a new single. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with the details.
Today, Sarah, we have a brand new song from a very popular artist who has delayed the release of his sophomore album not once, not twice, but three times. Finally, he announced his new release date is April 27th. I'm talking about Post Malone. Post Malone is the singer who gave us such hits as White Iverson in 2015, 2016 he gave us Congratulations, and then 2017 he put out a song that was number one for quite a few weeks. It was number one in 15 countries and has over 25 million streams, the song Rockstar with 21 Savage. Well, Post Malone is back and he's got a brand new song which we're going to check out today off the upcoming album. Let's listen to Psycho.
Damn, I ain't be gone psycho. Lil' mama bad like Michael. Can't really trust nobody with all this jewelry on you. My roof look like a no-show. Got diamonds by the bolo. Don't act like you my friend when I'm rolling through my hands. Oh, they be going psycho. My rollie going crazy.
So Post Malone has some help on this new latest single.
Yeah, one of the things he's doing on his newest album, he is doing a lot of collaborations. The last big hit rock star was with 21 Savage. His new song, which we just checked out, Psycho, features Ty Dolla Sign, who's another well-established rap artist. So you got two rap guys kind of going at it with each other in the song Psycho. It's a cool song. I like the song.
How is Psycho different from Rockstar?
So yeah, one of the ways that this song is different is that he likes to team up with different singers and include different singers. On his last song is 21 Savage. He's had a few different guests on his music, which is consistent throughout the entire new album, which is called Beer Bongs and Bentleys.
What a title.
Very interesting title. His second CD coming out April 27th. Interesting story. There's been a YouTube hacker who came on YouTube this past week and started taking people's videos off. One of the people that he targeted was Post Malone. Post Malone's videos were removed from YouTube by this hacker. They did finally catch up with the hacker, and they were able to restore the videos. Now, his real name is not Post Malone. It's Austin Post. And he took the name Malone from Karl Malone, who's a legendary NBA basketball superstar from the 70s and 80s. And he grew up loving basketball, so he decided, I'm going to take Karl Malone's name, so he calls himself Post Malone. He taught himself to play guitar when he was about 11 years old on the video game Guitar Hero, and that's where he learned to play guitar. Post Malone, interesting guy, he's got tattoos all over his body, and it was just revealed he's got a tattoo of John F. Kennedy, because he's a big supporter, big fan of John F. Kennedy and his presidency, and also, on a totally opposite spectrum, he's got a tattoo of Justin Bieber on his butt. Now, I don't know why, what made him decide to do that, but he decided to do that. Post Malone is one of the headliners for this coming up weekend's Coachella Valley Music Festival, which we all know is headlined by The Weeknd and Beyonce. But Post Malone will be performing there as well in the California desert. The new album is called Beer Bongs and Bentleys. It's his second album. Most importantly, the I guess this would be the fourth release date now for this album is April 27th.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. The music of Post Malone brings us an end to our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In November 2013, the Ukrainian people came together on Kiev's Central Square, or Maidan, to demand that their voices be heard. After 3 months of protests, President Viktor Yanukovych, who had attempted to distance the country from Europe and join more closely to Russia against people's will, fled Ukraine. The heroes of the Euromaidan won their battle but inherited a country where corrupt entrenched interests had long prevented reform. Working through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, the Department of State, and implementing partners, the U.S. government has worked closely with Ukrainian civil society and the government of President Petro Poroshenko to set Ukraine on the road of fulfilling the promise of Euromaidan, a stable, democratic, prosperous, and free Ukraine, a Ukraine where robust rule of law and low levels of corruption attract the domestic and foreign investment necessary to ensure economic success. But this is not a simple proposition and cannot happen without a number of difficult reforms. While much has been achieved over the past 4 years, there is still much to be done. For this reason, Susan Fritz, USAID Regional Mission Director for Ukraine and Belarus, recently declared in a blog post that change is underway. The justice sector and the healthcare system are being restructured, she wrote. However, continued efforts to address corruption, including through the establishment of a truly independent anti-corruption court, are key to solidifying justice sector reform. Decentralization is bringing government resources closer to citizens, and newly consolidated communities are working to make government services more efficient and accountable, Fritz wrote. E-governance is helping automate government systems to provide transparency and accountability to government processes. Energy sector reform and the restructuring of the energy supply system, once completed, will provide the country with more energy independence and security, she wrote. While Ukraine has quite a ways to go before it can declare success in its reforms process and victory over corruption, we believe we've helped make considerable inroads, Fritz wrote. Our goal at USAID is unwavering, Fritz emphasized, to continue partnering with the government of Ukraine, the private sector, and civil society to stem corruption, deepen democracy, and stimulate inclusive economic growth. We are committed to making Ukraine self-reliant and helping Ukrainians attain the prosperity they desire and deserve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.